who makes it pretty easy to waste money on ads.
If you ever felt like you don't really own your marketing, this episode is for you.
Google is almost entirely unregulated when it comes to search marketing.
This isn't an episode about quick wins, hacks, or silver bullets.
I think we will see a die-off of about 90% of marketing service providers.
If you ever felt burned by an agency, this episode will give you a much clearer framework for how to think about it.
Emotions are the death of good decision-making, and fear is the worst emotion you're going to have.
This is AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros, the show for contractors who want to grow without wasting time or money. If you're in roofing, HVAC, plumbing, or any home service business, we break down how AI and modern marketing can help you book more jobs, close more leads, and build a business that runs without babysitting every task.
If you ever felt like you don't really own your marketing, this episode is for you. Most contractors don't struggle because they're bad at their trade. They struggle because marketing feels confusing, risky, emotional, and out of their control. My guest today is Daniel Carpenter, founder of Creative Motive, and this is one of the most honest conversations we've had on the show about what marketing actually is and what it's not. Daniel introduces a concept he calls owning your marketing, not just in the sense of having ads or a website, but truly understanding, controlling, and being accountable for how marketing works inside your business. In this episode, we break down why so many contractors end up renting their marketing instead of owning it, how predatory agency models create fear, distrust, and long-term damage, what fiduciary marketing really means, and why it's missing from this industry, why set it and forget it marketing is one of the most dangerous lies contractors are sold, how emotion and fear quietly sabotage good business decisions, the difference between owning a job and owning a business, and how that mindset changes everything, where AI actually helps marketing today and where it still falls short, and why data attribution and CRM systems are non-negotiable if you want clarity. This isn't an episode about quick wins, hacks, or silver bullets. It's a grounded conversation about responsibility, ownership, risk, and trust, and what it really takes to make marketing work over the long term in home services. If you ever felt burned by an agency, overwhelmed by Google, or unsure whether marketing is actually working, this episode will give you a much clearer framework for how to think about it. Let's get into it. What's up, everyone? This is Mauricio Cardona. I'm the host today of today's show. I'm super excited to have Daniel Carpenter on the show. Welcome to the show.
Mauricio, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
I'm excited to talk to you. You had a great conversation. I think the conversation and the topics we're going to talk about today are going to be very beneficial to people, to contractors, just to understand really just the whole perspective of marketing and micro distribution. I think it's going to be very important. So I'm excited to get into it. Daniel, like we talked about this last time about ownership, right? Marketing and owning your marketing. What does it actually mean when a contractor or a business owner owns their marketing in practice?
You know, I think there's a couple of ways to approach that. And I think both have to be true to truly enable the business owner to have the maximal chance of control in a way that's healthy for the business. And the first is more conceptual. Like you either own your brand or you don't. Like you're going to have a brand. Every company has a brand. It is the sum total perception of the company. And companies either step into that and they become intentional with it. They use the reality of their brand to realize what their weak spots are. They root those out. They deal with that and they build an intentional brand. They truly own their marketing in the sense that they have stood up, they have addressed it, and that they are intentional with it. But then I think more programmatically, as we were talking about, there is the very real world that not everybody does own their marketing. Like there are a lot of companies and agencies and service vendors that if you are in the world of the built environment, construction, home services, they're going to come to you and they're going to just make it seem so easy. And then you'll find out you don't own your website when you want to leave, or you don't own your ads account when you want to make a change, or you don't own any of these things. That really you've rented a presence and bought nothing that goes with you. We see this all the time, especially with websites, with companies that they want to make a change and they signed on for an advertising program and they got a free website as a result, except they don't have a free website. And so the cost of leaving their previous vendor is now they need to build a website and they're shocked by the cost on that. And all of this comes down to this idea of not owning the marketing. Cause in the end, in that situation, yeah, you literally don't own your website. You don't own your own ad system. You don't have control of those things. But when that's the case, you're also not owning it conceptually, because now you're kind of beholden to someone else. You're not free to do what you want. You're shackled to ideas you don't have control over. And I think it's a bad position to be in as a business owner. Now, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't choose that, maybe strategically. Maybe it is the right thing for you to just lease a website and not own it, but count the cost and know what you're doing ahead of time, so that you're still owning your own marketing as a company and you're intentionally making the choice to say, you know, we're not going to own our website. We accept that when we want to make a change, it's going to be a few $1,000 to switch for customers. The thing that's painful to see is, well, business owners that they've been good at their trade or their craft and taking care of people and delivering a product, and maybe they haven't been through all the rodeos of business ownership and marketing, and they get taken advantage of by predatory companies that sell a low cost point and ease of service, and then everybody's disappointed down the road. And the whole market becomes jaded as a result. And I find that all very unfortunate.
You talked about brand perception. How does someone, if they've owned a business, like say for 10 years, how do they kind of get, how do they understand their brand? Like how do they in the marketplace create like a document where they can get their perception out there in terms of the brand? How do they understand the brand perception?
If you want to understand your brand perception as it exists, your best available option is going to be to email some people you trust to give you honest feedback and ask some core questions. But almost regardless of what happens with that, the right way to go about managing your brand perception is to sit down, do it yourself, or work with a teammate, or work with a provider if you want to invest well professionally, and describing what is essentially like the story of your brand. Like, who are you serving? What problems do they have? How does what you're providing solve their problem? How does that make them feel? And like, what is your conclusion on why you're serving? In other words, to reframe your thinking about your business in the eyes of your market. So like, let's pretend I'm a residential builder. Let's pretend I do kitchens and baths. It would be very easy for me as a professional who does amazing kitchen and bath to stand up and say, that's our brand. We do amazing kitchen and bath, no stone unturned, never over budget, et cetera, et cetera. And then we wind up sounding like every other kitchen and bath company out there. But the reality is that the client, the person I would be serving with my kitchen and bath company, is maybe less interested in some of those things. To them, it's stressful and it's scary and it's about trust. And they want to know that someone's going to care about what they want and their feelings and not just try to sell them something. And so like looking at kitchen and bath through the eyes of a homeowner that wants to buy a kitchen and bath is completely different from learning a kitchen and bath from the eyes of the professional company that wants to sell it. And it's because for every homeowner that is truly focused on excellent project management, they exist, but they're rare. There's going to be nine that are terrified about making the wrong choice, and they're going to want to know that someone's going to help them make choices in a careful way when they have a way back. Defining your brand in such a way as this, and then building it to work with you, Mauricio, for example, with yourself, like I would ask, like, who's your market? Like, what are they trying to solve? How do you help them solve that? What are their fears? Not yours, theirs. And like, how do you work with that? And then we would look at, okay, well, like, given that that's all that's true and that's what you do, well, then how do you do it? What's unique about your company and how you approach those problems? And if you put that all together, and this is where it helps to have a friend or a professional help you with it, because obviously it's a process. We build out narrative and messaging for websites, for advertising, for slogans, all these things, your Facebook page, your Google My Business, all of it. One message throughout all of those systems that says the same thing in every place, which then does you the solid of creating consistency and brand trust. And like, it shouldn't matter. Like, it really should. Like, who cares? If I'm buying a kitchen, the kitchen should matter. But prior to buying a kitchen, if all I see is the company's communication, then the fact that all the things match, they all agree with each other, and the thing it says on the website is very similar to the thing it says on the phone, and it's all about making me feel safe, it does matter. Because that's what helps me get to the moment that I can make those choices. And so, but it starts with that. It starts with starting on this core question of who is your customer and who are you, and defining a story that makes sense for solving those problems that must be true in every single way. Because you have to bear this out with your business. If you create some amazing story about your brand, and then the reality is like you think something different, that's just not going to work. You're going to get like 5 days down the road and people won't trust you. Things aren't going to function. It has to be a realistic expectation of what you do and how you work. And I guess the last bit on that, sorry that I bought along so much, is like, if you stumble into that process and you find a gap where there's just this really unfortunate gap that like you wish you were like this, because this is the right thing to say, but the truth is you do this over here, you may need to make some changes. Like if you're going to look carefully at yourself and at your brand and at your system and at your process of serving people, don't be surprised if you learn you need to improve things. I think all of the good companies do.
I want to make an observation because you mentioned about the customer, right? And how important the customer is into the process, what they think, what they feel. Also, how important what problems you're solving, right? I work with a lot of roofing companies and a lot of different home service companies, but in the roofing space is very specific observation. A lot of contractors, most of them actually, in that space, they refuse to do roof repair, right? And roof repairs is a primary interest that a lot of homeowners are actually need, right? Even though they're trying to sell roof replacements instead of roof repair, even though they need roof repair and they're actually searching, they're looking for roof repair. By not being customer centric, by not understanding their point, they're just basically shoving that down their throat. And it really, yeah, you can kind of get away with it. But at the end of the day, that's really the point. You're not doing this exercise from the beginning. You're not thinking about the customer endpoint, and you just say, "I'm going to do roof replacement," even though it's like I don't care about the other customer, and that kind of leads to the issues that a lot of people face. Just to make an observation, I don't know if you've dealt with that before.
No, I think you're right. I'm not saying everyone should sell roof repair, because maybe truly, the company really should only do roof replacement. However, like you should not wind up in that situation by accident. You should absolutely understand we're making a calculated decision that is going to alienate a portion of your market, that you will lose access to a portion of that market because you're choosing to invest here. If you're going to get rid of a portion of the market here and put all your eggs here, like be aware that you're doing that. Don't do that by accident. And I think there's probably some good things that could happen in that space. I think your point's a really good one. Like should a company like truly alienate the repair market? Probably not. I'm guessing there's a large scale potential to sell a lot of roofs to people that need repair. Is there a remediation strategy? Is there a way to take like 10% of your business revenues and put it into repair? Is there a space where you lose money on a 10% segment so you make money on a 90% segment? Like, do you have like loss leader advertising? Right. And this is where a business mentality about marketing and services is really, really helpful. And like, I don't know how many people that will watch this are in our line of work, man, but like my biggest encouragement is less for the builders or roofers and more for the marketing service providers. And like, quit taking advantage of your clients, quit trying to just get them to give you a dollar, start helping them learn how to run their businesses. Because like, especially for customers that for the first time, like how many times have you dealt with a roofer that's really diving into marketing for the first time? I bet it happens a lot. It happens a lot on my end of marketing. And like, I absolutely believe that we have a responsibility to educate those parties to the absolute best of our ability. And sadly, that is not what everybody in our industry does. It's not what everybody in our industry does. And so instead of learning, things just get more complicated. Relationships get more tense. I bet the other one you dealt with a lot is people showing up. They're either brand new, and they're hiring you into their marketing for the very first time, and they're super excited and kind of scared. Or they are super jaded and bitter. It's like one of those two, 90% of the time. And the reason is because marketing service providers do not carry a fiduciary responsibility. And instead of trying to serve their clients, they take from their clients. And I think it's disgusting.
Yeah, that was my next question. What do you think the breakdown in trust happens between contractors and marketing agencies? Where does that usually start?
I think it starts in their motivation, the motivation of the marketing agency, whether people realize it or not. There are teams that are, and there's a lot of them, like I think I run one. I don't think I'm the only one. I think there's a lot of them. I think they tend to be smaller. So harder to see. But it's going to be in the motivation of the marketing agency. If the marketing agency is out to give you a caveated, negotiated, careful agreement that protects themselves, lock you in a long-term commitment with no guarantees of any kind, I would be leery of that. I'd be very leery of that. Like, you could be a great actor inside of that. Like, you could be an amazing marketing company with the best motivations and use that system. But you could also be the worst one. Like, that system protects the bad actors because it doesn't require any accountability from the marketing company. My honest belief, and this is not going to make me friends in our industry, is that marketing should be regulated. I like the idea of the realtor. Like, there is a logo, the R, the realtor for a licensed realtor. And I think it should be marketer, and I think it should be a licensed marketer. I think marketers should carry a fiduciary responsibility for their clients. I think they should be legally liable if they step outside of that. And we don't have any of that. It's one of the biggest industries on the planet. The advertising sales of Google and Facebook and all the others are what drive their trillions and trillions of dollars in valuation. And there's absolutely no regulation. I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised that you see people showing up and making a quick buck and taking from their clients and sort of souring the entire thing for a lot of people. It leads to a very jaded, hard-edged market where people are either brand new and they're being preyed on by sharks that are unregulated, or they've survived that and they are very skeptical of marketers, which is fair. But if we could create some kind of system that allowed that skepticism a place to rest, i.e. the various state laws that protect marketers, or sorry, that protect real estate customers and enforce realty requirements, I think it's great. I don't know how to get there. Do you want to start a nonprofit with me and start lobbying for state codes on marketing? Probably not. This sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have the background to actually comment on that. So I wouldn't know anything about that. I haven't even thought about it, honestly. I do like what we talked about last time, we just mentioned fiduciary marketing, which is something that I think for us, the way we do it, it's kind of like one of our core values is putting more money into our clients' pockets. At the end of the day, for me, like, obviously different agencies are different, right? Some are more like creative agencies or, you know, some, you know, different web type of agency. For us, it's really about how do I generate revenue for our business, for our clients, right? How do I generate revenue? That's the most important thing. So for us, it's our core value is putting more money into our clients' pockets. And there's a lot of steps for that to happen. It's not like a one to 10. It's actually A to Z. There's many things that have to happen in place for that goal to be accomplished. But talk about that. Talk about like how is that fiduciary marketing? What does that mean?
So fiduciary marketing means exactly what you just said. To be a fiduciary is the idea of protecting your clients' interests ahead of your own. Like, are you willing to take a loss in protecting your client? Do they truly come first? In all the spaces of professional services that are recognized as professional, this is baked in. This is baked in for certified financial planners. This is baked in with law, attorneys, accountants. Like, it's different language in different places, but it's the same core concept. And then with marketers, like, anybody can hang up a sign and they're a marketer. And so there is no framework that requires it. So when we say fiduciary marketing, what we are telling our clients and our partners and our friends and the world is that you can count on us. Like, our job is to serve you. Like, Mauricio, if you are my client, my job is to serve you, is to give you options and optionality that protect your interest. If I think you're going to make a decision that's going to work against you, to let you know. If I think in any way, at any moment, that my services are not going to advantage you, to tell you that. And like, we do that. I mean, my honest belief is that if you are a fiduciary marketer, it means that on occasion, even though there's money to be made, you will tell a client, I don't think we're the right fit for you. I think you're going to do better over here. Like, yeah, we could totally help you. But honestly, if you do billboards at the mall, you'll make more money. Go do that instead. Fiduciary marketing means that you're willing to do that, that you're willing to let the client go, to not prioritize the money you're going to make, because the actual goal is not just that you will help them make money, but that they will make money with or without you. The core idea of fiduciary marketing is that our clients can truly trust. Put them first. However, the result of that is long-term, low dollar. I named my company Motive because of this idea. Our motive is to, I would love easier, softer ways to, but the ways that I found to prove it are predominantly easy or me to not fix clients in long-term commitment, to give clients options to back out, and then to refer clients out for services that we think they would be better served with elsewhere. Every single way out of being a fiduciary marketer is costly and difficult, which is why we need it as a standard.
Why do you think the idea of set and forget marketing is so dangerous for home service businesses?
I think it's dangerous for every business, not just home service, but maybe especially so because it's a cash business. Set it and forget marketing is dangerous because it is selling you the lie you want to keep. That you don't need to worry about this. You don't need to understand it. You don't need to put time into it. It's not incredibly risky, and it's all going to be just fine. And that is the exact mentality that destroys businesses, destroys marriages, creates corruption. Like, I think if you look almost anywhere in life, that's sort of like the easier road logic. It's just not true. And so, like, invariably, the companies that sell set it and forget it marketing are exactly the ones you don't want to work with because they are selling you what you want to hear. They are to a team locking you inside of some sort of long-term commitment. There's no way they don't, because they would never make money if they did, because it doesn't work. That sort of mentality for marketing is encouraging you to not do your job, to not own your own business, to not be able to inspect or understand how it works or why it works. Like, those people are not your friends. The people that are your friends are the ones that say, hey, guess what? Like, I love you, but you got fat. Like, you need to work on it. Or like, you know what? Like, when you leave the room the last year or so, people don't say nice stuff anymore. You need people to tell you what you don't want to know. But that's true. We need actual partners in marketing that will work in a space of conviction to say uncomfortable things to help us actually get to our goals. Like, I'm all for, like, I think it's amazing. We have like this GLP-1 thing or whatever. Like, historically, you had to actually be a disciplined person to lose weight. Now you can take a drug. You know what's amazing is how many overweight people there are in the world with weight loss drugs. Like, it's fascinating. Like, things do not get better on their own. Businesses don't get better on their own. Marriages don't get better on their own. You won't get better on your own. Everything you have of value in your life came from your willingness to take risks and do hard work. And if you pull your punch on marketing because that's the one that's too scary, I get it. And it's a shame because there's just no way around that. Like, unless God smiles or you get incredibly lucky, it will be as a result of calculated risks and with like real understanding. And if you choose to not understand your marketing before investing money in it, don't be surprised if you just wind up with less money.
Yeah. One of the things that this is, I'm running the business almost 9 years now. It's going to be 9 years later this year that I've learned. It took me a long time to understand is that at the end of the day, like what we do is we provide a service, but in order for us, our clients to get results at the end of the day, we have to also provide a kind of coaching and accountability, which is something that, we had to kind of implement into our business, something that wasn't even aware of that had to happen. But exactly what you're kind of saying, sometimes saying uncomfortable truths and obviously doing it in the beginning of the relationship where there's more kind of less kind of pushback, right? It's also getting our clients to understand some of the things that we recommend. And at the end of the day, it's not us to kind of, there's things I need to do on their end to actually get the results they need at the end of the day, right? That's kind of the challenge, right? It's like another analogy I like to use is that if you hire an employee to your business, you're technically the employee, right? They're the employer. But if you hire an employee, you still have to give them a roadmap, right? You have to train them, onboard them. The same thing with us. If they hire a marketing agency, they have to onboard the agency, right? You have to treat them as an employee. You have to be a part of their team. And a lot of people don't miss that part, right? And with the set and forget, that's basically two. My interpretation on this is that in the agency world, there's basically like there's low cost agencies which are maybe $500, $1,000. Some of them, these companies are very massive actually, but they sell a product or service that they just buy and honestly just forget about the marketing, and they only talk to the agency for like 8 months. There's little small businesses. And then there's other agencies that are way very expensive, right? And there's the middle, which is us. And I don't know if you're probably in the same, like between $2,000 and $10,000 a month, I would say. And that's kind of like where a lot of things get, you have to work with the right client and make sure that is, they're getting the understanding. Because like if they're, you know, typically the bigger accounts, Fortune 500 companies or whatever, or corporate accounts, they have this in place. They don't have to tell them basic shit. They know. They're going to get it. You're like, you just say, do the ads for me, guy. Like, I don't need to talk about this stuff. They already know the stuff. Like, they just need performance. Like, they don't need, like, other stuff. They'll get you all the things you need, right? So that's kind of the challenge in the space, honestly, is that whole aspect. And it took me a long time to understand that.
I see two primary challenges. And so this is more me to you than the audience we're talking to here. But it'll probably be helpful for anyone. Like, the number one challenge is finding the right client for me, for my company. Because a lot of people do want to just buy the cheap, easy solution, show me the money. That's a terrible client. Like, I don't want to work with that client. That is the client that is angry and upset and very dramatic because they've forgotten something they said 3 months later. And like, I don't want to be in that position. And then the other one is like effectively communicating what we do and the value of it. And like, the conversation we're having here, like this is the stuff that communicates it. Except there's a real problem in that, honestly, the sharks say all the same things. Like marketing companies, trustworthy, untrustworthy, they all show up and say, we're a partner. We're going to help you get there. And I have found very little like magical ability other than referral business to peel back that curtain and help potential clients understand, like, no, like, we really do this thing a little different. Like, we're like all about accountability. And here's this, and here's this, and here's this. Because half of them are so jaded from the last experience. And so, like, I wish there was a way in which marketing companies could be researched from the outside in a way that was different than their own marketing. Like, yeah, you can find my company on Clutch and all these other places, and you'll see all the reviews that we've helped make sure there, that we cherry pick the clients for, all this stuff. And I know this isn't what we're trying to solve in this conversation, but I truly think there's a need for some sort of third party validator for marketing companies, because it's not the same thing. And everything, I know what I'm doing is not the same thing, because I meet clients and they are in like business agony because they got taken advantage of by all the other guys. And everything you're saying sounds like you're not doing the same thing either. And like, to my mind, it has to be true that you're encountering the same thing. And I'd love to hear if it's not the case, but like, how do you successfully differentiate yourself from all those other marketing companies that want to promise the same things, but don't deliver?
For us, it's really about, it's industry experience, right? It's results. It's just, we have a strategy that we know gets consistent results for our clients, and then we just execute on the strategy. That's what makes us different. But there's no magic pill at the end of the day. It's just doing the things that we know work and have been doing it for a long time. So that's kind of like the secret is that, and also at the same time, we are integrating technology and making sure that this is not a lot of agencies I know do this, but we integrate the client CRM to get a full picture of their sales process to make sure that there's no, because at the end of the day, that's what they want is more sales. So that's basically kind of the angle. It's more work, right? Because you know, typically when I started the company, I was just doing sending the leads to the client, and that's basically it, right? There was nothing else. Now it's like we have, you know, we send it to your contract link, which is a GHL, basically you send it to a client, but at the same time, we integrate the client CRM with contract link, so we can see the entire sales process from end to end, and we can see what's going on and create a report based on that, right? That's kind of like the aspect. I can feel very confident that once they take accountability, here's what I mean, that once this is integrated, I'll give you an example, right? I had a client that was wanted to, and I, anybody listening, this is important to understand, because I think anybody who's listening will understand that this is a very important thing that I'm discussing. I had a client that, you know, threatened to cancel, and they didn't have a CRM. They were using, you know, our software as a CRM, but they weren't really managing the CRM. They were just not doing it. After a couple, 2 months, basically talking to them, convincing them, they finally listened to what we had to say. They started attributing all the leads to the actual CRM, and they figured out over a 12-month period, they had generated over $1 million in sales from our campaign. And it wasn't a leads problem. It was a visibility problem. And once they figured out, okay, that now I understand. And they were blaming us before that. And that it took us 2 months to convince them, and they did it, and now they're happy. So
this comes back to this idea of partnering and mentoring and coaching and enabling, but it's not as simple as we just do it for you and it's done. Because the reality is, if they don't know how to hold the ball, they can't catch it.
Yeah, it's like another thing. It's like you're passing the ball as a football player, and somebody has to catch it to score a touchdown. That's the same analogy, right?
I think it's absolutely true. I love that you're deploying the CRM as part of the toolkit. I think that's wise.
One thing that we talked about last time was how Google is not—they don't have the best interest of the client. You know, many times, right? Why is that important to understand for contractors to understand like that? Sometimes these guys don't have the best interest in mind.
This is, again, why I love this idea of fiduciary. It's nice to know that someone has your best interest in it, because mostly they don't. Google is a for-profit tech corporation that is worth several $1 trillion at this point. Three, maybe four, something like that. They have made historically almost all their money from ads. And like that isn't because people always find what they want. That's because people keep buying ads. They've been accused of being a monopoly 100 different times. And one of the reasons they get accused of that is saying, well, like, where else are you going to advertise? Right? They have effectively managed to turn search into something that is theirs. To the point where, I don't remember what the deal was with Apple, but like that they have some sort of agreement that the search engine comes wired in, and Google search comes wired in with that. To the point, like, that if you're going to go looking for something, to Google is a verb. Like, it's a verb. I got to tell you, man, if you start a company and your company name turns into a verb for the thing you sell, like, that's winning. Like, you have modified language. And so that company is, to a very real extent, the only game in town. And that makes doing business with them very dangerous, because people don't have somewhere else to go. It means if you walk into that particular casino and you lose a lot of money, you don't really have too many other choices. And so Google makes it pretty easy to waste money on ads. They make it very easy to waste money on ads with mistargeting, lack of exclusions, like dumb stuff, stupid stuff. Like, if you don't go through and manually exclude South America, they may just sell ads there. Even if you've told them only Columbus, Ohio. You said only Columbus, Ohio, but you didn't tell them not Brazil. Sorry, Brazil. You lost $1,000. And then, like, there's no one to talk to. Like, maybe if you spend $250,000 a month, you have someone to talk to. But mostly, there's no one to talk to. And it's like stumbling your way through the most expensive video game you'll ever play. It's not rocket science. You don't need a genius. You need someone who knows where the buttons are, knows which ones to push, and is going to be honest. But frankly, like, if you dive in there and Google throws you these emails, it's like $500 on us, just set up this campaign. Don't be surprised when that campaign costs you $5,000 that you didn't mean to spend and it nets you nothing. Because if you don't properly target, properly apply keywords, properly apply exclusions, i.e. words you don't want used, like DIY or free or classes or things like that, where you certainly don't want to pay for that person to look at your website, Google's going to sell that ad to anyone it can. And because you push the buttons, you're going to be to blame for whatever happened. And this is frankly why the advertising industry exists at this point, is because the middleman is required.
Yeah. And oftentimes the Google reps, right, that they assign to you are assigned to you and really just to kind of make money for Google, not really make money for you, right? They just recommend things that many times are just completely against the client's best interest, and they don't give a shit. Honestly, they don't care.
My view of Google and Amazon and any of these other ones is that a healthy view of them is like these Godzilla, like Japanese monster movie creatures. That Godzilla comes like stomping into the town, and you have no say in what Godzilla does. Like, you need to work with it, maybe. You need to work around it. You need to survive it. But you don't get to choose. And if a couple of these tech companies start fighting, it's the same thing. Like, people get stepped on all the time. There is no cost or consequence. I'll give you an example. Google has done a wonderful job of building laws. And they really are. They're like laws, except they're not. There are Google requirements for how you do X, Y, or Z with search marketing for real estate or for medical services or for pharmaceutical or any number of industries where they could apply some sort of pseudo-regulatory framework they have. It stopped actual regulatory frameworks from being created. Because Google has all these rules and exclusions for how you can market this, 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 or this service, and they won't work for you if you don't, they have managed to successfully stop actual laws from being created. And I know this sounds like ridiculous. I'm in like a pseudo-conspiratorial space. This is the precursor to being a conspiracy person. But it's not actually a conspiracy. It's just the way it works. Google is almost entirely unregulated when it comes to search marketing. They are entirely unregulated because they've made up their own regulations. And when someone brings it up, they say, no, we have all these rules. People say, okay. And so the result of that is that you have a giant for-profit corporation that exists solely to put money in the hands of its shareholders in charge of the nuts and guts of the marketing of the vast majority of our social infrastructure. And government has no part in it because they have never once successfully passed a law to regulate the industry. And it's just true. It hasn't happened. And so, no, I would not expect that thing to be in your best interest. Unless you're a shareholder. Be a shareholder. If you want Google to be in your best interest, own stock.
Yeah, and it keeps growing, right? It keeps growing. Where does AI generally help marketing today? And where does it still fall short?
That's a great question. AI is a phenomenal tool for building language, building data sets, iterating on logical structures. Like, let's say you're writing an SEO plan for a website. If you can build the core segment for one page, it can probably iterate the rest. As a thinking partner, I think AI is phenomenal for helping you aggressively critique your own ideas and iterate new ones. When we dive into anything from brand naming to keyword generation, to market research, to content creation, to content structures, any of these, AI is not just a partner, it's a leader and a core team member. When we get into business strategy, or we get into applied systems inside of platforms such as Google or so forth, we see a lot of mistakes. If I go to the AI, and I know which question to ask. And my question is about a roofing business. And it's about their keyword strategy. And I can say to the AI in a very articulate way, like, hey, we're working with this company in this way, and the market has been this, but we're worried about this, do this. We're trying to do this. Like, so give me 5 ideas for this, 10 keywords for this, and be critical of my thoughts. What am I missing? AI is phenomenal. It'll give you all that. And then in our experience, I mean, Google's a great example. As we just talked about, Google really just wants to make as much money as possible because that's their job, to protect the shareholders. It's literally the job of the for-profit company to make as much money as possible. Don't be mad that the for-profit company wants to make a profit. They would love to put all of us out of business because there is billions and billions and billions of dollars being spent managing Google ads by third parties, but Google could capture all that money themselves. They have been completely unable to deploy AI that will outperform a third-party marketer. AI is simply not sufficient. It's not good enough.
Yeah, that's the idea. So there's a lot of talk about AI maybe replacing marketing agencies. I know for a fact, I know Meta and Google are, maybe I think their goal is to make it so simple where you just launch an ad for businesses, right? And instead of using a third party to run ads, the small business can do it themselves. And that's always been their goal for a long time. I'm skeptical of that goal, right? I'm skeptical that's going to happen. Maybe it will, but I'm saying that it won't. I'm saying why I'm skeptical is the other part of completely replacing marketing agencies because of the lack of strategy that a lot of small businesses lack. AI without the actual strategy, without the knowledge behind it, you're not going to replace the strategy. So I'm skeptical of that. I don't know what your feedback is, if it's actually going to replace the actual marketing agency.
AI is to some extent unaccessible by you or I, because at some point it tips into a space where we can't predict how the next iterative change is going to enable the next change and the next change. So for me to say it's not going to happen, I think we'll be foolish. And I know you carefully avoided it. I don't believe it's not going to happen, but nor do I believe it will happen. I think it's likely that we will see more and more intelligent use of AI as we go. Like right now, it's a great tool for helping plan campaigns. I think in a year or two, it will make sense that Google will probably launch some sort of interactive campaign manager, which they'll be able to put in the pocket. But still, if you don't have the right strategy going into that, you're not asking the right questions, it still won't work. But then a couple of years down the road, is it possible that Google will deploy Google Marketer? They'll start at the basic level and ask you enough questions to really lead you through it? Yeah, it's possible. Like you and I can talk about it and sort of design it here conversational. But does that mean it works? Does that mean there's enough chips? Does that mean like the energy costs make sense? Like at some point, this gets really to the side of it. But there's a question of energy infrastructure. I mean, it's just the same conversation as Bitcoin. It's like, yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, but how much energy does it cost? Like how much? So like you're literally turning electricity into the value of Bitcoin, because you have to spend electricity to buy Bitcoin. Well, like my understanding, and I'm no genius with this stuff, is that some of the basic queries we put into AI, it costs like $5-$10 if we're not careful with how complex we make them. Those companies are very intentionally losing money to build infrastructure. The future wants it, right? Like every science fiction movie we've ever seen wants it. Humanity is desperate for its magic technology that does everything. I'm pretty curious. But like I see AI make a lot of mistakes. Right now it needs fact-checking constantly. But I could see a world where what we sell people becomes much less the doing and much more the conceptual strategy level. And at that point, my friend, I think we will see a die-off of about 90% of marketing service providers. So just won't be enough marketing. And like that is a very real question. And I think we would be foolish not to look at it. I don't know the answer, but I do think it's possible.
Yeah, you're right. I think it's definitely possible. I think it can happen, I think the other way I see it is that there'd just be smaller teams that can actually do more, right? Smaller teams that can actually do more. You would be less people. If you think about content before content, it was always not that super expensive, honestly, if you knew what we were doing. But you had a team of writers to create content for SEO, for copywriting, right? You had a team. Now you can, if you have a copywriter, if the actual person that knows what they're doing, you can largely replace those writers. So that's a way that's kind of replace it. Another one is kind of graphic designer. You still need that graphic designer though to actually have the actual strategy behind it, the actual like brand, all that stuff. You can use it as a tool, but you still need that person, that head person, to understand the actual strategy. Because anybody can create a logo, any contractor can create a logo, but is any good, right? Anybody can create like a blog article or whatever with AI. It's not super hard, but is any good? That's the next question.
Sure, but I want to push on that, because like we went through that and we had writers. And then we started offering our clients, like, do you want to pay our human writer at our hourly rate? Or do you want to pay the project manager at our hourly rate to manage the AI? And by the way, that's like 5 times cheaper. Everybody chose the AI. And so we let go of our writers. And like each step of that process sees the team becoming smaller. But each one of those people that we didn't need their services anymore, they were the future owner of the company. They were the future partner in our business. I think that's what's happening. We have these smaller teams in a more competitive market for each other. And bluntly, I don't think everyone's going to survive that. I think we're in a season of a lot of people are going to close their marketing companies. Some of them just because they're scared. Others because they don't have business.
Yeah, 100%. You made it. Last time we talked to you, you said you made a distinction between somebody who... a business owner who owns a job versus somebody who owns a business. How does that mindset affect marketing outcomes?
That's a great question. It's kind of paradoxical, because the person that owns the job, honestly, I mean, they still own the business, but they're not thinking about it. And so every dollar feels personal, and they're they're losing money with everything that doesn't work. So when I use this language of a person that owns a job, they're sort of stuck inside of the business. They're enslaved to it in some extent. They don't have a lot of freedom. They're probably not allowed to take risks. And every time they lose a dollar while trying to make a dollar, like, it's going to hurt because they fail. And there's a mental shift that needs to happen for the human being to be free while still owning a business and not enslaved to that business. And that mental shift is to understand that that business, in some sense, is an entity. And it has not just the right, but the need to take risks. And sometimes we hit the ball and sometimes we don't. And there's a need to have like a mental framework that allows that. A human being that owns a job, every dollar lost is a dollar lost and it hurts. And if we do that enough, we're done. To a person that owns a business, it doesn't matter if you lose a dollar in the moment, because the question is, what did you learn? What is the next approach? And how do we get to our end goal? The person that owns the job, their goal is going to be, I guess you'd call it capital preservation. They want to maintain the value of what they have. They need the income coming in and they're scared to go stuck. To the person owning the business, it's really a question of what can I leverage to take a tactical risk to accomplish an objective? And if I fail, what can I learn and how can that help me to do the next thing? These are two very different mentalities. And like, I have been both of those people. I have flipped back and forth on the daily between both of those people as I've wrestled with my own personal insecurities and fear and my need to be very intentional in the ownership of my business. And I've worked with all those people. And like, my understanding is that one of these groups is not more special or better than the other. It's the same people. There's just been a bridge that's been crossed. And the bridge, it really nails down to the reality of like, do I or do not I not accept that my job is to bear and carry risk? Or do I think my job is to earn the revenues that come in? Because if your job is to bear risk, that makes you an entrepreneur. Because that's what that word means. The definition of entrepreneur is a risk bearer. That's literally the word. And it's interesting. I was never an entrepreneur. I was never a guy that wanted to found a thing or build a thing, but this wasn't me. Not ambitious that way. I have a different makeup. And yet, at the same time, I think by that definition, I am one. I was a guy that very much owned a business, but really I owned a job. And I had to change my thinking and get intentional and start thinking about scale and the acceptance of risk and the fact that I don't need to win every game. That's not how baseball works. You don't win every game. And I would say the same thing to the clients that we serve, especially in home services or roofing or residential construction or remodeling. Like, I get it. I absolutely get it. But until you can step outside of the job of your business and start thinking of it as something you pilot and control, but the big game you're playing where the business wins and loses on its own, you're not going to have the right perspective. It's worth getting that perspective. Even if you disagree with it, go find that perspective just to push back and say, yeah, you're wrong. It'll still benefit you because it'll enable you to see the whole of your business in a way that is much less emotional, which is probably the biggest piece. Emotions are the death of good decision-making. And fear is the worst emotion you're going to have.
Yeah, that's actually really good. I you know, working with a lot of people over the years, I've come to realize that a lot of decision making is actually not based on best logical business decisions. It's actually based on emotion, and you'd be surprised how many people actually. That's actually the primary way people make decisions. Actually, is through emotion, which is surprising. It's even today for myself. And obviously, like in business can be emotional sometimes. But something I do, if I get mad or angry, I usually wait 24 hours before I make a response. I respond. I try to let my emotion, because I'm an emotional person. Everybody is, but I try to wait a certain time before to cool down before I actually make a decision on yes or no. And sometimes I write the pros and cons before, if it's a big decision, right? But most people are not like that, which is very surprising. Let's talk about, we talked briefly about this, but I want to learn more about attribution and tracking, because it's a very big challenge, right? So how do you, like, for clients, what do you typically set up for tracking? What do you think they should have tracking set up? How do you set that up typically?
Absolutely. I got to warn you, I have a hard stop in 3 minutes, so I got to call at 12 nights.
Yeah, got it. Yeah, for sure.
You can't make good decisions without good data. It's just that simple. The benefit of digital marketing and why it works better than billboards or newspaper flyers is not because it actually, quote, works better, although it does. It's because you can track the data. You know what works and what didn't. The real benefit of a database marketing system is you can go and look and say, okay, what happened with every penny I spent? What were the results? And then what did I learn from that? If you leave off the what did I learn from it part, like, you really just, like, skipped half the value of your investment. Your investment in digital marketing is not that you get clients today. It's that, yeah, you get some leads today, but what you really get is the beginnings of a database system for making decisions in the long term, which is why Mauricio here recommends the CRM system and tracking all of your informatics. And I agree. So I would recommend, absolutely, on a data level in-house, you want to have a CRM. You want to be tracking all of the leads that come in a way that makes them totally accountable. And then on the marketing side, what we want to do is we want to make sure that everything prior to them entering your CRM system is also accountable. And so we work within major providers for ads like Google Ads, or Meta or otherwise, where we have access to a tremendous amount of data. We use third-party analytics aggregators like Agency Analytics to build reports that are only discernible and easily modifiable for you to have what you need. And then, honestly, it's not rocket science. We use Google Tag Manager, and we use Google Analytics, and we integrate back with Google Ads to build really smart conversions that are tracking exactly what we want to know and not what we don't want to know. For clients that have more complex needs, I wouldn't expect to see this in the world of home services, remodeling, or roofing. But for a client with more complex needs, there's Tableau. Even inside of Google, there's Looker Studio. We can build these really custom things. But if you have a professional that is without waste applying Google Tag Manager and analytics, and we're talking about the digital environment, that should give you 90% of what we need.
Awesome. So, Daniel, where do people find you?
The website is createmotive.com. That's createmotive.com. And if you actually want to come hang out on the 2 Sunders, I'll buy you lunch. Come on down.
Awesome. Hey, Daniel, man, I appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
No, privilege. Enjoy talking to you.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for listening to AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros. If you got value from today's episode, do us a favor. Follow the show, share it with a contractor friend, and leave a quick review. Want help using AI or smarter marketing to grow your business? Head to contractormarketingpros.net and book your free strategy call.